evolution of engineering. So to give you some examples, I think technology is really advancing at pace. There's automation that's becoming ever more sophisticated, and I think engineers are going to be critical to designing, integrating, maintaining these ever more complex and ever more integrated systems. AI is a great example of something that's kind of feels like it's come from nowhere very recently, but already is being used across all kinds of systems and industries. And engineers are going to have to build, manage, troubleshoot these systems that are increasingly reliant on AI technology.
You've just listened to a clip from the latest episode of the City and Guilds Insight podcast series, Navigating the UK Skills Challenges. I'm Bridie Kingsland, Funding and Policy Insight Lead at City and Guilds. Workforce skills needs are changing due to new technology, automation, and the increasing influence and use of AI. This series of podcasts aims to examine some of those changes, and we'll be talking to experts from many different fields as part of the series. If you work in Post-16 Skills as a training provider, or you're an employer interested in understanding more about skills, or an individual learner or young person who wants to gain insight into future career opportunities, this is the podcast for you. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Managing Director of Gen 2, Craig Smith, as we discuss the engineering megatrend we've identified as part of our local skill improvement plans analysis. Welcome, Craig. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Bryony. Thank you for having me. So I'm Craig Smith, currently working in City and Guilds in the world of engineering. Given that's very much my background, that's why I'm here today. So my career started as an engineering apprentice, in the power industry, but I've worked through that industry and aerospace and defence, leading me into the world of education in City and Guilds. So yeah, great to be talking engineering and be with you today.
Thanks very much. It's great to have you. So, Craig, as you know, in 2022, the government tasked 38 regions of England to research and develop local skills improvement plans. And they did that in partnership with employers and training providers to identify the current and future skills needs and shortages which employers are facing. So those plans were published in 2023. And at the end of last year, my colleague Eric and I analysed all 38 reports and developed a dashboard to help us understand what the LSIPs were telling us. So, as you know, our analysis threw up some very interesting common themes, and one of those common themes was engineering. And what we're looking at going forward now and in the future is a bit of what we're calling an engineering megatrend. And we're calling it a megatrend because we can increasingly see that the implementation of both automation, AI and technology is going to mean that we need more and more of those engineers to design, produce and maintain systems. So as an expert in the sector and someone who spends a lot of time talking to employers, what are your views on those findings and what's happening in the engineering sector at the moment?
So I think firstly, highlighting engineering as a megatrend is absolutely spot on. I think the sector is really booming. It's also evolving at quite a pace. So in terms of that boom, we're seeing real exponential growth in demand for skills. Looking at engineering within the overall jobs market, engineering jobs account for roughly 19% of all employment opportunities in the country. And in terms of recruitment into that sector, is about 25% of all recruitment adverts are for engineering roles. And from my point of view, that demand's driven by kind of challenges old and new. So starting with the old, we've talked for years about an engineering workforce and the kind of cliff edge that we've been heading towards in terms of engineers retiring and us needing to fill that gap. I think that is still absolutely critical. And the work that the sector's been doing around recruiting apprentices and encouraging new starters into the sector has been really, really positive. I think some of the newer challenges and that kind of evolution of engineering, though, is really widening that gap and making us think a little bit differently. So technology is advancing at such a pace. So automation is getting ever more sophisticated, and engineers will be absolutely critical for designing, integrating, maintaining the complex and increasingly automated systems that we rely on. AI within that is requiring engineers to build, manage and troubleshoot increasingly intelligent systems. And also the existing infrastructure needs upgrading and modifying. You know, the sector that I originally started in was kind of built in the days of, well, nationalisation, pre-privatisation. You know, it's very old systems coupled with very new, but certainly the older parts of those systems need upgrading, modifying. And again, I think engineers from various different disciplines are absolutely key to that. An example of new technology that's really kind of challenging engineering thinking is drone technology. So again, you know, in kind of the old days, we'd fly helicopters to survey assets with a view to assessing the condition of those assets. These drones need designing, developing, manufacturing. They rely on software to sit behind that to control and automate the process. But then also the data you collect. You know, in the old days, we'd sit and view tape recordings and manually analyse and record our findings, whereas now that can all be done by AI. And I think finally on evolution, there's the kind of the broader transition to a more sustainable future. And that's going to require growth in engineers across a whole host of renewable technologies such as solar, wind, hydrogen, carbon capture and storage, but then also kind of bridging across into construction. Energy efficiency and sustainable building design, again, is becoming an area where there's increasing demand for engineering expertise.
We were talking earlier on today and you said that we think of engineering as a sector, but it's not really a sector in itself. It's one of those disciplines that sits across multiple sectors.
I think you're dead right to call it a discipline, and it does span multiple sectors. And I think that's part of the challenge. So we talk about engineering, but actually what does engineering mean? And particularly, what does it mean for the people we're trying to attract into the sector? And what does it mean for the people in the sector who are transitioning potentially from one sector to another, but still relying on that engineering discipline that they've, you know, kind of known and loved, that is now evolving in a pretty pacey way, really. So yeah, I think people coming into and already in the sector, understanding those kind of transitions and the way that the sector's shifting is really important.
So linked to that, the post-16 sector, which supplies a lot of engineers, both, you know, at technician level, will need an increasing number of industry experienced tutors to supply to make sure we can meet that employer demand for engineers. We know it's quite difficult for the FE sector to compete at the moment for salaries paid in industry and the commercial sector. Is there anything that can be done about that challenge?
I think firstly, you're absolutely right, Brian. I think that growing demand for engineers really does necessitate a stronger presence of industry experienced tutors within the post-16 education sector to equip the learners with the necessary skills sought by employers. However, the challenge of competing with industry salaries is a real obstacle that clearly needs to be addressed, but is a challenge for the sector. So I wonder if there's probably a number of kind of fronts that we need to think about that on. So I think firstly, starting with remuneration, I think while complete salary parity just isn't feasible, you know, there's not the funding within the educational sector to do that. Clearly, budget limitations around that. I think offering salary scales that are more reflective of experience and qualifications is probably helpful. And I do wonder whether there's some sort of bonus structure, whether that's performance-related bonuses, which I think people coming from industry are probably more used to, particularly private industries, or whether that's a signing on or retention bonuses to support us with recruiting those higher calibre professionals that we need, but then, you know, supporting them to stay within the sector. But salary isn't the big all and end all. And I think there's a lot of people join the sector for a lot of other reasons, and it clearly isn't salary. So I think that those non-monetary benefits are really important as well. And within that, having that real positive, stimulating place to work, I think, is what attracts a lot of people out of industry into education. I think also some of the flexibility that we can offer in education versus industry is also attractive. I think providing opportunities for professional development, whether that's through conferences, workshops, networking, just that continuous CPD, I think is something that again attracts people into the education sector. I think there's a third point for me around collaboration and partnerships. So I think the closer we can get to industry to help serve their skills needs, but also help them be part of the solution. So whether that's, you know, industry partners offering staff to be guest lecturers, associate lecturers, you know, creating that pool of people that education can draw on who've got that really current cutting edge engineering experience is critical. So I think there's a model there of developing some sort of dual career pathway where people can remain in industry but also support education, you know, potentially on a part-time, flexible basis. There's some really good examples out there at the minute, actually, of sector bodies, you know, working to facilitate that partnership between industry and education, and facilitating that knowledge sharing. That's absolutely critical. And I think finally, kind of streamlining the transition. So for those who do want to join teaching within the education sector on a permanent basis, I think supporting them to do that is really important. So whether that's through mentoring programs, really thinking hard about the way we deliver the initial teacher training, so supporting them to be that dual professional. That's exactly what we've been doing, actually, within City & Guilds. So within our training businesses, we've established something that we've called our Skills Academy. Mm-hmm. And over the past 12 months, we've had over 50 individuals join that programme from industry and transition into education. So becoming that dual professional, with the whole wrapper around being onboarded well, going through their initial training well, being mentored, shadowing, rather than, to be honest, when I transitioned into training, as I guess we called it back then, in the power industry, you were very much kind of, you were in one day and you were in the classroom that afternoon almost, it felt. So I think, you know, that real support and supporting that transition is working well for us. And we're currently working with some of those sector bodies to share that as a model that we can, you know, support sector-wide.
That's really great to hear, because we're definitely going to need more of that going forward as we exponentially need more engineers. If you're enjoying this podcast, great. Don't forget to subscribe to it on your favourite podcast platform and leave a review. It would be greatly appreciated. Now back to the episode. But as well as attracting an increasing number of tutors into the sector, there's also, as we know, the need to attract more young people into choosing engineering as a career path. What do you think the challenges are there? Because we know that in some cases it can be seen as a bit of a dirty job, but increasingly going forward into the future, that's not true. It's becoming, I suppose I'm calling it a bit of a sexy job, realistically. It's working in sectors that are linked to green, that are linked to sustainability. So what do you think we can do to promote the opportunity more comprehensively to young people so that they understand the pathway that an engineering qualification can lead to?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Brian. I think, you know, in addition to attracting those industry experienced tutors, there's clearly a real need to increase the number of young people choosing engineering as a career or others transitioning from other sectors into engineering as a discipline. So I think in terms of the challenge, there definitely are outdated perceptions. So I think sadly, engineering does still suffer from the perception of being dirty or certainly a physically demanding job. And I think young people and their influences, you know, whether that's parents, teachers, you know, they might not realise the breadth of contemporary engineering careers that are out there. I think there's definitely a lack of comprehensive careers information, advice and guidance. And I think that IAG really does play a crucial role in informing students about their career pathways, about educating their educators, you know, to support them in thinking about different career pathways. However, there's some real kind of challenges around offering that. You know, there is limited experience out there in schools and, you know, in some of the bodies that might offer that advice. I think there's also a misunderstanding of the pathways that are available. So I think many young people do have a limited awareness of the really diverse career paths that are available in engineering, that whether that's engineering qualifications or apprenticeship could unlock. I think they don't appreciate the roles that are out there in terms of roles in innovation, roles in design, rather than just being, I guess, the types of engineering roles that you might see in your kind of day-to-day life. I think they also potentially lack clarity around the progression routes beyond an apprenticeship or beyond their initial qualifications into higher level education and career progression. So, yeah. So I guess, you know, what do we really do about all of that? I think, first of all, we need to change that narrative, and we really need to shine a light on modern engineering and showcase some of these cutting edge technologies, the sustainable engineering that's out there, because that is, I guess, you know, to use what's now become your word, Bridie, the sexy end of engineering.
Yes.
But also kind of how do we draw out the diverse role models who are working in these sectors, you know, in kind of high-end areas of engineering to share their experiences and be that role model for others. I think there's also something around how we bring experiences of engineering to young people. So whether that's organising workshops, industry visits, STEM challenges to provide that real kind of hands-on exposure to engineering. But I think having said all that, I think there's loads happening already.
Yes.
A lot of that does happen already, and I think it's important that we recognise that. And I think it's probably more around kind of amplifying some of that. And for me, collaborating and working in a more coordinated way is really important. So a couple of good examples out there is the work that STEM Learning do through their STEM Ambassador Programme.
Yes.
I think really helps coordinate the activities that happen within schools, colleges. And secondly, the Tomorrow's Engineers Code, which Engineering UK introduced, I think is another great way of getting large, any size company actually, I know the code's been signed by companies large and small, but you know, getting people to make that commitment to go into schools, colleges and offer STEM engagement in that coordinated way. So we're kind of really on point with the messages that resonate.
Yeah. That's great. So another one of the points that came up again, well, there is that need to upskill the current workforce. What can government and providers do about that?
The LSEP reports do very rightly highlight the need for that two-pronged approach. So I think it is about attracting new talent into the sector, but it is also about upskilling the existing workforce, you know, in that backdrop of evolution. So yeah, what do we do about that? I think from a government perspective, I think one thing that always drives action is financial incentives. Whether they can afford that or not, I guess, can be government's challenge. But, you know, some level of, whether it's tax breaks or subsidies for companies who are doing what government want them to do, frankly. So investing in upskilling of their workforce. I mean, the scholarships and bursaries, grants out there already, which are generally focused towards younger people. But I think once you get into that 19 plus area, it becomes ever more difficult to access things like that. So I think, you know, maybe if it's scholarships, grants, bursaries, a programme like that, I think could be helpful. I think it is also important to recognise, though, what government's already doing. And The Skills Bootcamp programme that they've introduced, I think, is a great initiative for upskilling staff. For those who are not aware, bootcamps, probably a very simplistic level, are broadly programmes up to 16 weeks. They're fully funded for new entrants into the sectors that they're serving, or really heavily subsidised, actually, for the existing workforce, particularly for SMEs that are accessing those bootcamps. And they focus on areas with the most critical skills needs. So engineering, green skills and construction being some of those sectors. So I think that's really important to kind of recognise as something that I believe it's working well. I think also from a government point of view, there is something around how we recognise and start accrediting some of these upskilling programmes, because many of them aren't regulated qualifications. You don't get a certificate from an awarding organisation, say, at the end of it. So I think thinking about a mechanism to really recognise those industry-specific upskilling programmes alongside formal qualifications is really helpful. So whether that's digital credentials aligned against some sort of national framework, I think there's something in that. And then secondly, coming on to education providers, I think there's a lot of good work already happening there around developing targeted programmes in collaboration with employers. So I think just encouraging more of that collaboration so that industry gets exactly what they need. I think there's also something around micro-credentials and modular training programmes. So particularly in that upskilling area, it's not necessarily a whole kind of full-fat qualification that's required. Yeah. I think whether it's a more modular kind of approach, I think could be really helpful. But then also providing more blended options. So rather than, you know, traditionally face-to-face, once a week, you know, block release or whatever that might look like, I think giving people a much more blended option. So being able to learn remotely and only have to come into a physical facility for the kind of the practical and the most value-adding face-to-face elements is important. And I think that'll also help us to reach a much more diverse array of learners to attract in people from those more underrepresented groups.
Interesting, because there was a lot of talk at the recent annual apprenticeship conference about the potential changes to the apprenticeship levy, such as flexing it to become a skills levy rather than just an apprenticeship levy. Though obviously that will depend on what happens at the general election. What do you think is needed there to make a difference to employers for the sector has the engineering skills and the workforce needs it needs going forward in the future?
So I think the potential revision of the apprenticeship levy from being a very apprentice-specific levy to a much broader skills levy is really interesting, particularly for developing skills in the engineering workforce. There's some clear benefits, but of course, I think there are some watch-outs as well. Mm. So, you know, in terms of benefits, I think greater flexibility would be very much welcome. So I think allowing employers to use that levy to invest in the existing workforce in a much more flexible way, I think would be very welcomed, particularly, again, around this upskilling and not just solely focused on apprenticeships, I think is really important. Addressing those broader skills gaps, so I think flexibility in a wider range of skills areas beyond those kind of directly addressed by apprenticeships, I think, is helpful. And I think that's beneficial, particularly in the engineering sector, as it evolves and has that greater need for upskilling the existing workforce. I think that's becoming ever more critical. I think it also encourages innovation. So I think encouraging employers to think a bit differently and be more innovative around the training programmes that really hit the mark for industry is important. But I think on the kind of the watch out side, we absolutely can't cannibalise the current apprenticeship system. So,
No. You
know, for its faults, I do believe broadly it works very, very well. And I think apprenticeships particularly are really important for bringing new people into sectors. So it absolutely can't damage that. The funding has to come from somewhere, though. And if it's not going to come from apprenticeships, then where does it come from? So potentially that could be an increase in the 0.5% of your payroll bill that we currently pay, or it might be a reduction or the total removal, I guess, of the £3 million salary threshold, which would effectively bring more employers into the levy and, frankly, paying the tax. Employers may or may not be happy about funding, you know, a broader skills levy in that way. I do expect, though, that eligible programmes would still need to be governed. You know, there's got to be some governance around all of this. So that would likely mean only regulated qualifications might be eligible for the funding, or programmes like skills boot camps, you know, may be brought into the levy rather than it being a standalone programme within DfE. And I think finally, quality is again really, really important, you know. I think the government delivering quality value for money programmes has got to be high on the agenda. So, you know, will oversight from Ofsted, you know, be required? Or, I mean, for me, it seems quite likely, really, if it's government funded, then there will be some level of oversight, probably from a body like Ofsted. So I think Overall, though, for me, I think any reforms to the levy that support upskilling, broader engagement of SMEs and a focusing on these priority sectors would be a step forward.
Great. That's brilliant. Thanks very much, Craig, for joining us today. So you've heard it from the expert there, everybody. That was Craig Smith, our engineering lead at City & Guilds.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Bryony.
Thank you for checking out this episode. Remember to share it with a colleague or friend. Until next time, goodbye for now.